Hey everyone, welcome to Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world, from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort. And without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast truly approaches music from all angles. She's a singer, songwriter, producer, videographer, photographer, and a fellow podcaster. She just put out a 3-song EP, Chill Lightning Rainbow, which may actually have the greatest title of all time, and is actively working on her next album. Inspired by a wide range of artists, from vocal powerhouses to EDM greats, she channels her eclectic musical taste into relaxing yet upbeat tunes. So without further ado, please welcome the first master of theology here on Made for Music, the host of the Wild Musician Podcast, Seattle's own Shaw Wild.
Hello. That was delightful.
I'm so glad you enjoyed that. First things first, Masters of Theology. Mm-hmm. How did you get there? Because you studied in Scotland.
Yep.
So do you mind walking me through that experience and then how and if it ties to music in any way?
Yeah. Okay. Everything is connected in the dots. So when I was in high school, I was having to decide where to go to college. And I just asked myself, like, from now on in life, every decision you make is going to be answering the question, what do you find most exciting? Every decision since then just paired up against that. The first one was which college you want to go to. I was like, ooh, overseas is exciting. And I like international politics and stuff. And the best college in the world for that would be St. Andrews. And then I got to St. Andrews and I toured around. And I looked at all the buildings, and the politics building was ugly.
Oh.
And the theology building was beautiful. And I was like, I would find it more exciting to study in that building. That same philosophy just moved me forward. So I studied theology and biblical studies because I found it interesting. People uh-huh. always ask me, like, did you want to be a priest? And I was like, no, sometimes people just find things interesting.
Right.
Like, that's it. Religion has, like, impacted the whole world. It's fascinating. When I graduated, then it was time to decide what to do for a job. So once again, I was like, what's exciting? And that's led me through multiple careers all the way to music and art, what I'm doing now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Kind of like connecting the dots in different directions constantly.
To connect those dots, I want to jump way back. Were you in a musical family? And then how did that directly or tangentially influence your decision to later in life pursue it?
My parents love music, but didn't play it. My brother got really into music. He was in like 3 or 4 school bands, and all of the boys he's friends with were in bands at home. So I grew up in a band practice space. Like, I come home and it's just like boom, boom, and my mom and I are like, it's so noisy. Make it stop. So that was my life, was just metal bands.
Right.
And then I would be singing the big vocals of like Celine Dion and stuff in my bedroom and in my car. I just kind of dropped in myself. Like, I took cello lessons and piano lessons and was in the church choir, or, you know, just, but never pushed hard with it. It was always just like, I'll do lessons for a little while and then quit.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the orchestra for a semester and then I quit. And how that developed really was like a huge passion for music, just like my brother, but I kind of got shadowed by him. And in my head, it was like, he's the musician. Clearly.
Yeah.
He's the one that stays in the bands. I'm the one that drops out. It was actually a joke at our school.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, because he's 4 years younger than me.
Right.
So that's kind of built this idea in my head of, he makes music, I like music. I was always very inspired. Like, he got a guitar when he was a young teenager and would just for hours, like, practice. And so I think it was almost intimidating to be like, that's what is required. But there was a little trail of regretful moments. Like,
gotcha.
There was a school musical and I wanted to audition, or I didn't really want to audition, it was scary, but they made every kid audition. And so I was like, okay, I'm gonna sing Over the Rainbow. That's my favorite song. I'm like 12 years old. And I get into the audition space and I just like completely chicken out and sabotage and sing like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, and they put me on stage crew.
Oh no.
I know. And then like a few years later, I was in the church choir. And they're like, who wants to do the solo? And I'm inside, I'm like, I love singing, I want to do the solo. And then I was like, not putting my hand up.
Oh,
it was just too risky. Yeah. I was like, and then college, same thing happened with like a cappella group. My roommate went to go audition and she's like, do you want to come be in it? And I was like, no, totally fine. I'm good. I've reflected on this a lot.
Right.
But in those moments, I think I just felt not confident enough or scared or just paralyzed. There was something going on. And enough of that happened to the point where it built up that complex of I'm not a musician or I'm never going after these things. I'll just be in my comfort zone. And then I did a yoga teacher training, and this is my big breakthrough moment because the program requires everyone to kind of deal with their shit. Like, you don't get to have something going on like that under the surface and let it go unnoticed. So 8 weeks of like deep reflection to the point where I was having to stand up in front of 30 people and say, I actually really love singing and I don't sing in front of anybody. And I've turned down all of my opportunities because I've just had a fear that I'm maybe not good enough, or maybe I love it so much that if I do it and I'm not good, it'll be crushing. Like, now I know I'm good. Back then though, I'd never really performed. So I didn't know, like, I was so nervous of American Idol happening to me where everyone laughs when you thought you were good. As long as I keep it secret, it's still possible.
Yeah. Do you think media played into this kind of fear of
I don't think about it at all now, but the American Idol thing used to be huge in my head. Because I grew up in the time when American Idol was hot.
Right.
And so if you're a good singer, everyone's like, you should be on American Idol. And then at night, every night, people are watching and laughing and just, that's where I saw the risk. Because I saw people going up there and saying they had the dream that I secretly had.
Right.
And they got shut down.
Oof. It really is brutal.
Just kind of a toxic thing. I just saw it as toxic. The yoga training was a big deal because my teachers in that moment were like, if you love something, you have to go do it. You don't get to chicken out, basically. And my yoga teacher made me stand up in front of the whole room and sing. And it was such a deep-seated wound and issue that it took me 45 minutes to make a sound.
Oh my God. And you have to sit up there the whole time?
Yeah. 30 people sat there silently staring at me patiently while I started crying and shaking and just like trying to muster the courage to sing.
For me personally, traumatic. Trying to, you know, but it sounds like it was a breakthrough.
It was a breakthrough. They wouldn't force anyone to do that. My teacher was intuitive to know that that's what I needed. Because it was like this whole building up of my life to the moment where she basically was like, are you going to do it or not?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because this is your moment to decide. And I remember after about 40 something minutes, I just got to that point where I'm like, this is fucking ridiculous. There are 30 people who want to move on with their life and they're patiently waiting for you to sing. And so I was just like, and I belted out like opera. And it went great. Everybody gave me a standing ovation, and they had chills, and people were crying because they saw that, like, that breakthrough. And then everyone came up and was like, you need to go be a professional musician. You need to go. Like, go.
Get out of here.
Yeah. And from that moment on, it was me figuring out then how to go do it.
What is that next week, month, year look like?
That night I ran home and I was like, guess what I just did? I sang. And by the way, I love singing. You didn't know. But
right.
And that next week, I was in the teacher training. So I went back to the yoga classes and my teacher was like, all right, now for the rest of the training, you will sing to us every day.
Like, oh, wow.
At the end of every yoga class, you will sing in like a yoga chant or a song, or because she's a great teacher that was like, we have to keep this going.
Uh-huh.
And then the next year, I was out of the teacher training program and I was teaching classes to the public. And every time I taught at the end of the yoga class, I would sing them a chant.
Oh, nice.
And that's how I build up the confidence to sing in front of people.
Would you say that spirituality within yoga and then music and then also with your studies, did it all culminate, or was this a completely separate thing?
The quickest way to explain it is just that I'm fascinated by all the stuff on the inside. So as soon as I was like 15, 16 years old and I had a car and I had the freedom to go and really like explore the world more, I naturally was drawn to what's going on in the church over there. There's people sitting there silently. There's people praying. Who are they talking to? Everything else seemed really obvious.
Right.
But there's this world of mystery. Mystery is sexy. So that was just the beginning of searching and looking at all the different religions, going to all the different churches, getting degrees in it. And I'm still like that now. I'm curious.
Very cool. you incorporated the singing into your lessons as well. How important was it have an audience, even before the music thing, like teaching a full class? There's a bunch of people, there is still a performance to that, to mm-hmm. teaching. How has that influenced your approach to music, or has it?
Oh, hugely. So I've never been stage fright, just nice. Singing. I will get up in front of hundreds of people and talk happily. And then if they said sing, I'd be like, oh no. And so it was me learning that I actually really love, I love standing in front of many people and feeling the energy of the crowd mm-hmm. and connecting with them, realizing that I could do that through talking or teaching or singing, and wanting to be able to choose the tool. Like, it's just a tool. Uh-huh. The end goal is this connection with people. So it's a little flip-flop. When I teach a yoga class, I'm talking and I'm teaching. Then at the end, people are delightfully surprised when they hear me sing. It's like my voice comes in like this magical thing that helps them relax even deeper. And I'm working right now on flipping it so that when I perform in a venue where people have come for music, then I weave in the energy, the way that I speak, the things I choose to say, have the intention that I would have in the yoga class. You're like, I came for a concert, but I got some like medicine I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so important too, because when we go see these shows of like huge artists, I think in a way, like that's what they're delivering, right? Is when you feel something, there's like, okay, there's good musicians performing. And then when you're like, oh my goodness, what just happened? There's like a spiritual essence, right? Especially because you're pulling from something outside of music, of like yoga, and pulling that in and the spirituality of that and the intent.
Totally.
Which is really cool.
Totally. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's, I think anyone who goes to enough concerts eventually hits that. You'll find like your band or your concert or your festival moment where you're like, something happened where it was like out of this world, and I like had a spiritual moment. And that, having those moments from the crowd is then what really inspired me to be like, how can I figure out how to do that?
So kind of looking for those moments to deliver to an audience, do you think about that when you're songwriting, of like, here's how I can deliver that?
They're completely connected.
Cool.
So as I'm producing the music, I mind travel to all the different places where the music will be heard. So I imagine myself performing it on the stage, and then I imagine myself in the audience listening to it, and I imagine myself, like if I'm at a festival, like I always think of the gorge, I'm like, what would it sound like if I'm at the top of the hill laying on the grass? What would it sound like if I'm down in the pit? What would it sound like if I'm far away and I just hear it like echoing in the campground? I'm testing it to see how that music's affecting everyone in every situation, because I know what it's like to be in those places. So it's kind of like a measuring stick. I'm like, oh, you know, it's fun to play, but it's not going to get anyone to dance. Or the people on the grass, like, what would I have to do next? What sound would I have to do next to get them to suddenly be like, we need to go dance? And they'd get up and run down the hill. And so I'll imagine myself on the grass, and I'll play with sounds until I have the feeling of like, oh, I'd want to go down and dance.
That's awesome. So tying this back to like this timeline that we've been on, you have this breakthrough. Were you immediately like, I'm going to write songs, or were you just like, I'm going to start playing more and singing more to get comfortable?
Mm-hmm. I gave myself challenges. Uh-huh. So I turned 25 and 26. Those years of my life were the yoga breakthrough, singing to my yoga classes, getting to the point where I had the guts to make music and to say I make music.
Uh-huh.
When I turned 27, I gave myself the challenge to write 27 songs that year.
Oh, very cool. Because that's awesome.
It was like, if you want to be a songwriter, you need to write songs. Uh-huh. So go. And I love challenges and goals like that. And then when I turned 28, I challenged myself to do 28 performances. Then at 29, I was like, I'm going to stop with these challenges because I'm stressed.
Nice.
Now I'm just going to, like, without goals, make music and see what projects I'm developing. And that's when the recording and the producing came in.
Cool. So when you started writing songs, were you recording them in any form, like on your phone, or was it just, I'm going to arrange and sing? And
I am a compulsive recorder, like a content maker. So everything from day one has been audio and video recorded. I've got like 200 or 300 terabytes of content. I think Prince. I saw Prince like died. And they found in his archives like 4 years or something crazy worth of, that's a total, I just pulled that out of my ass. But like, it was insane.
Yeah.
And so subconsciously I was like, I can do that too.
Yeah. Were you actually like, I'm going to when you were songwriting, I'm going to get a...
So specifically what happened was I record on my phone. I would write songs on scratch paper or my notebook. And I filled journals. You're actually underneath the couch.
Oh, right.
There are all my journals. There's hundreds of them. Not hundreds, that's ridiculous. There's dozens.
Know what you mean.
Yeah, so I carried my songwriting journal. Then I started carrying my guitar everywhere. That was the big thing that was a big shifter for me. Like, I would leave the house and the guitar was with me. It would go everywhere, even if I didn't play it. Because that meant any spare moment, like if I was in a waiting room, well, I've got a guitar, I'll play it.
Yeah.
And that, that's how I practiced and learned guitar. Because, you know, I saw my brother put in all those hours. And as an adult, I didn't have all those hours.
Right.
So I carried my guitar everywhere. So I'd have 10 minutes before the dentist. And I'd have an hour in the park on my lunch break. And I'd sit in the back of I do photo shoots. So while I was waiting for family to show up to the photo shoot, I'd get there 15 minutes early. And I'd have 15 minutes of guitar practice. And that also really helped with my identity, too. Because they'd be like, oh, there's Shaw. She's a musician. Obviously, she carries her guitar everywhere.
Yeah.
And it really started to make me feel confident in that. Also carried my journal and my phone. So wherever I was, I'd be coming up with little songs and lyrics and just piling them up. At first, I would come up with them and I wouldn't really memorize them. I would just come up with something cool and I'd write it down and record it.
Nice.
And so I'd be relying on the paper and the recording for it to be remembered.
Right.
And then when I went to go perform in my 28th year, I had to go to those papers because I didn't have any of it memorized. It's kind of a cringy memory, but I was on stage with the papers, reading my lyrics off the papers, because my goal that year was to perform, and it didn't matter if I knew my words or not, I had to perform.
Right.
And so I'm looking down at the paper and it's so awkward and terrible. And as I saw that, I started to realize, like, oh, I need to actually memorize these things. Mm-hmm. So then I stopped writing them down on paper. And I would record it as a backup sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I stopped recording, actually. I'd be like, if it's a really good thing, you better memorize it right now. And I told myself, if it's good enough, it'll be worth remembering.
It'll stick.
Yeah. If it's not, let it go. It wasn't good enough.
That'll really push you as a songwriter. That's really interesting.
It also... it put on that pressure because I have memories of sitting like in the woods or somewhere where I come up with like a really great lyric that I would love to record, and I'm not going to record it. And so it's this moment of like, but this is really good.
Uh-huh.
And so I would sit down like on a log and I would just repeat it over and over. And I was like, I will not forget this. Like,
oh, wow.
I'm not going to let myself record it. Uh-huh. I'm like, come on, you could record it. And I'm like, no.
That's like anxiety inducing for me, like losing it. But at the same time, I 100% understand.
It was like tattooing it on my soul.
Mm. Oh, wow. That's a beautiful statement.
Yeah.
I like that.
And those words, I can tell you all now because I know them.
Yeah.
You know? And that's how all my new songs are now. I don't write down anything or record it really until it's completely memorized and I can perform it. And then it's in me.
Uh-huh.
And then I will document it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So for those who can't see, we are currently in your home studio. What is your current process now to get from that idea? Because we're like sitting amongst a keyboard and you've got Ableton up, you've got like speakers. So what does that process look like from inception to here's my finished product?
Yeah. So I'm working on my next album. I released my EP in June and then I realized I needed to take a little break from music. So I took the month of July off. And by that, I mean, there was no music business being done. I wasn't trying to book shows. I wasn't sending out Instagram posts. And I wasn't producing anything on my computer. To the best of my ability, I was not going to do anything music.
Uh-huh.
But of course, I wake up and I'm like, I want to play piano.
Yeah.
And it was great because that little break gave me the chance to play for fun. So in the moment of just playing for myself, I would play on piano and come up with little ditties, you know, just look staring out the window and come up with poetry and just playing around, which I think once you've made music more, you know what I mean when I say just playing around. And when you're new to music, you're like, what do you mean? You just came up with songs. But that's like through the practice, if you're just starting, you do scales, you learn other people's songs, like you do all that work and eventually just naturally you start having it flow out of you. So I just would come up with these little poems and I usually find a chord progression that I like, and then I write an entire set of songs using that same chord progression. So like 6 songs, all with the same chords, all different melodies. That way the music on the piano, I don't have to think about it, and it allows my mind to just explore with the lyrics and the ideas. So yeah, in the month of July, I gathered like 6, 7, 8 songs, that were piano and vocals. So they get written down onto a post-it note, and then one by one they get drawn out and ready to be produced. And then they get put up on the wall. So if you were here, you'd see there's a pile of post-it notes that are in the queue, and there's some that are in the, those are finished
being produced. Oh, right on.
The ones behind you have been released.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And when it comes to the production side, then I record. So I come down with the microphones. Like, is this how much detail you want?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I come in the garage and I got the microphone and I've got the piano and the vocals. That's all I've got. So I click record and I tap out a tempo because I usually haven't been using a metronome.
Uh-huh.
And so that's usually the most painful part of the whole process.
Walking down.
Yeah. It's like I've been flowing free and now today's the day where you have to choose a tempo and you're like, that's not how I wanted it.
Yeah.
Then I'll record the vocals and the piano together and get the feeling. And then I start to break it apart. So I'll just hear in the headphones.
Mm-hmm.
And I do all this by myself. So this is the same stuff that happens in a studio. I just by myself. And I maybe do 3 or 5 takes for the vocals until I have like a really strong, like, yeah, I'm proud of that. That's good. That's how it sounds. And then on Ableton, I will go through the vocal track and I pick out the most beautiful moments of the vocal take. You know, like when you're listening to a vocal and it's like, the person has a pretty voice, but there'll be that one note.
Uh-huh.
It's just like, oh,
yeah.
Wow. So I'll take all those out. So then I have a little toolbox of the prettiest notes that I sang. And those become the percussion, like a beatbox.
Oh, wow. So that's kind of what you were doing earlier. You have like a launch pad over there and there's some vocals in there.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And then I start using samples. I use my guitar, the piano, and I use Splice for
so good.
Sounds so amazing. Before I used Splice, I would record my own sounds out in the world on my phone. Like one of my favorites was a bathroom door that was really squeaky. I had a really fun time going and recording samples in the world because it makes you see the world differently.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone else just went to the bathroom. I was in there and I heard like this creepy like sub drop. It was like, then Splice made my life a lot easier. Then I work on the songs for a few weeks and I export the version of them every time I'm done working on it. I export it and then I listen to it when I drive or walk or go anywhere new. I listen to it in my headphones so I can hear what it sounds like in all those different environments. Because again, I'm testing it. Like, is this fun to drive to? Is this fun to run to? Is this fun to have in the background? And like, that's where I get the best feedback. Uh-huh. It's not sitting at the desk.
Right. That's awesome. To take a half step back, you mentioned Ableton.
Mm-hmm.
You've been songwriting for a little bit. When did you decide to self-produce and what led you to Ableton?
My husband is amazing, and when I told him that I wanted to be a professional musician, his response was, okay, and he came home from work the next day with a Focusrite interface.
No way. Yeah. That's so nice.
So it's like love through action, you know?
Uh-huh.
A lot of people were like, go get it, but he was like, do it. It was an act that made me believe in myself because he clearly believed in me enough to give me the tools I needed.
Yeah.
The Focusrite came with Ableton sample version
nice.
Or something. So
yeah.
That's why we got into it. And then I just upgraded to the better versions. I asked some of my friends who did production. It was such a blank world. I didn't know.
Like, right.
Who cares which one you use? And that's kind of what they told me. They're like, you just have to choose one and that's your thing. And
totally.
So I was like, well, this one was delivered to me.
Yeah.
So I'll do it. And also the fact that it's really easy to integrate with live performance,
mm-hmm.
which is important to me because
right.
I want to perform my music too and not just produce.
How did you teach yourself Ableton?
Learning Ableton is the same as learning any instrument and learning any software. I love technology and I make all my art through Adobe Suite, right? Like Photoshop, Lightroom, Premiere Pro. All of these programs are really complicated
mm-hmm.
and complicated to the point where you'll cry and you'll be frustrated and you'll feel like, am I ever going to be able to do this? And when you are hitting that obstacle for the first time, it's a real question.
Mm-hmm.
But after years of being an artist and using all these things, you hit it and you're like, oh, my friend, Yeah. It's like, oh, hello, darkness, my old friend.
Yeah, 100%.
You're like, oh, shit, another program.
Yeah.
And so I approached Ableton when I realized it was going to be a beast like that. Mm-hmm. The way I've always done it is button by button. So one day I just, like, sit down with, like, today is the day. Mm-hmm. And you're like, file, drop-down menu.
Right.
You're like, I know what save does. Moving on.
Right.
And then you go and you find, you just check off until you've identified all the buttons. Mm-hmm. And the difference is, like, with Photoshop, it's a little bit more like you've painted before. So it's like, here's a canvas. This is a paintbrush. Go mm-hmm. ahead.
Right.
With if you're new to making music, the whole concept might be totally foreign. So right. that's the extra layer that's complicated, is not just what do the buttons do, but I don't even know what that is.
Yeah. Why would I do it?
What would I do? Like, what does quantize mean?
Yeah.
And so yeah. not paintbrush. I get the paintbrush. So there was a lot of Googling for buttons, and then a lot of painfully, like, really shit YouTube tutorials where you're just trying to figure out what it does, and you're like, this person's not helping me.
And they talk for
They're
10
like,
minutes.
This is the weather in Denmark this morning. Look out the window. I'm really happy you're listening. And I'm like, I'm not.
Yeah.
God.
When someone goes on for 5 minutes of how they would love for you to subscribe and all the other stuff, it's like, the title of your video was how to quantize drums to a track in Ableton. So please, within the first 20 seconds, start quantizing a track in Ableton.
Right? Like,
and for those of you that don't know, quantizing is like snapping something to a grid. Mm-hmm. So if there's a sound, or like a drum beat, for example, you can... and maybe it's a little bit off, you can actually snap it to make sure that the snare lines up on the two. Or you could go as deep as like a 64th note, I think, in like Pro Tools.
You're welcome. You didn't have to watch a YouTube video.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so what it looked like was me waking up day after day and mustering a little bit of motivation to learn one more thing. It was just so intimidating. So it was learning one button at a time, or learning one concept at a time, like watching so many YouTube videos on what is compression, mm-hmm. what is EQ, like that's a big topic.
Yeah.
And so one YouTube video doesn't summarize it. That mentality helped me a lot. While I was learning all these things, I started making what I call wild cards. Have you seen my wild cards?
I don't know.
So the wild cards may have been taken down, but I made learning Ableton fun by making mini songs.
Oh, I love that wild.
Yeah.
That's really clever.
Try to come up with all the fun, punny things with my name, Wild.
Yeah.
So the wild card, it started with chakras, because I'm familiar with them through yoga. And chakras are all associated with a different frequency or a different sound. So I started kind of playing with that. And I was like, well, what would it be like if I could have a sound for each part of the body and go through it like a song? So as you listen to it, your awareness travels through your body.
Oh, very cool.
So this is what I started with in Ableton, because I was able to take the sounds and put them in order and click play. So all my wild cards were limited to 1 minute.
Okay, very
1 minute
cool.
songs. And once I'd explored the chakras, then I started using it as storytelling. So I went on a run one day, and I really specifically remember getting out of my car, tying my shoes, lighting a joint, running down the side of the beach. A cute guy ran towards me and I smiled at him and I ran on. So that happened to me. And then I went to the coffee shop afterwards and I spent a few hours producing a wild card that tells that story. So if you listen to it, it's music, but you're like, girl getting out, tying her shoes, lighting a joint, running. Like when the guy comes towards me, he's cute. I believe there's sparkles. It's like, so I was learning how to communicate a feeling or an action or an event. How do you translate that into sound? Flirtatious eyes. Does sparkles communicate that? I just did that for like eight or nine months or something. I made all these little wild cards. Another one was, I couldn't sleep at night. So I was like, what does it sound like to not be able to sleep? And what does it sound like to work through that until you get to a place where you feel peaceful enough to go to sleep?
I relate to that hard.
Yeah,
so
I'll hook you up with that wild card.
Yes, please do.
It starts off with like the chaos of like, it's all your brain talking.
Right.
And then you can like hear stuff in the background, like someone yelling, like my neighbor. It's just like, it's like chaos. And then just the way you would talk through your own issues where you're like, okay, I need to stop thinking. I'm going to try and meditate. I'm going to take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just sit here. Like all those things you talk through, but I did it musically. So you hear all this chaotic sound and then there'd be like, like a breath, like a something that pauses everything for a moment. Uh-huh. And then that kind of continues until you hear music kind of chime in that feels peaceful and beautiful.
Oh, that's awesome. I love stuff like that. And I think it's such a challenge compositionally, but I love coming up with a story behind everything in the song. So
I think you told me that about when you were on my podcast.
Yeah, that's why I'm like super,
I'll hook you up with that one.
Yes, please do, because I'm like, I want to know what that sounds like. I guess before we jump into the podcast, which is super cool, actually how we met, what should folks kind of expect? You've put out an EP, you mentioned you're working on a record, and we've kind of talked through the process. Sonically, what is it that you're trying to do next? Because I know you bring a lot of stuff in, and I think we were talking before, I don't know if I said this on the podcast itself, but I can like hear your love for electronic music, but you use organic analog sound. Was that intentional? And then two, what do you want to do next?
I love singing. I love playing music live and feeling my body making the music. But I like the sound and the total freedom of electronic music. That's why I combine them. I started making music with a guitar and singing, and that felt amazing, but then it started to feel limited. So then I moved on to the keyboard, and then when I started doing the electronic stuff and I did the wild cards, that's when I realized anything you're feeling, you can express it perfectly. Like exactly how you feel, not similar.
Right.
Exactly. But when I do too much electronic music, I feel really disconnected from my body. I start to feel kind of depressed. Mm-hmm. And days go by, if I haven't touched the acoustic instruments, where I'm like, do I even make music anymore?
Right.
Because it's only been in my head. And it needs to be in the body too. So that's why they're both so important to me. And so, yeah, if you look at my past, you'll find acoustic music. You'll find the crazy wild cards that are all electronic. And moving forward, I'm using the acoustic as the skeleton and the backbone. All electronic music can cause a lot of stress in people. And I'm thinking like from a yoga teacher perspective, if I've got a bunch of people who are stressed at the end of a work week and they come to yoga and I play some beautiful electronic music, they're gonna like it, but it's not going to touch like the depths of their soul the way that they'll be touched if I sing. Just a human voice, it'll tap into that, like, oh, mommy's singing to me. Like, and I know this because I've had years of playing beautiful music and no one says anything. And the minute I sing, people cry. And they're like, thank you so much for singing to me.
Right.
Like, you're welcome. So it's wanting to bring that into the music that it feels good for me. And so you're going to totally hear the instruments and me singing. And then playing with the electronic to bring it to life and add in cooler stuff. And I guess I'm really only talking about my next project because I want to be surprised by what I do after that. Like, I'd have no intention of having, like, one style forever.
Right.
You know? Like, I...
Whatever's mysterious and exciting.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, my name is Shaw Wild, and I really love living up to that. It's like, you don't get to know what's going to... I don't even get to know what's going to come up. It's going to be wild.
Uh-huh.
Like... wild in the sense that it's gonna be cool, and wild in the sense that it's actually free and it's not domesticated. Like, if I suddenly release a rap album, okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Setting that stage from the get-go just gives you the open playing field, which I think is really cool. Definitely got like an aesthetic. How has like having the photography business and then influenced music? And then did you, when you dove into music, have a goal to build that aesthetic from the get-go? Did you know what that was?
Before I answer that, I have one more thing I want to add to
yes,
the last question.
Go for it.
You were asking about the fact that I use vocals, and I use the vocals as percussion, and it's like such a thing. And my breakthrough, and this is why I want to share it, because I think it's really helpful.
Totally.
I was making these wild cards, all this electronic stuff, and there was one night where I took my husband on a joyride at nighttime, and I was like, listen to this new wild card. And he was like, you know, like, cool, yeah, but like, it's not blowing my socks off. And he's like, I want to hear your voice. Like, these are all sounds I've heard before. He's like, just go use your voice for everything. Like, try it. And I went back that night because I just had this like light bulb that went on. I was like, well, what if I take my voice and then chop it up and use my voice as the instruments? Could I make my voice through electronic manipulation sound like a guitar, sound like a drum? And that night, I kind of birthed the song Lightning Strike in Summer, which is on my EP. And it was a breakthrough moment because it went from like making wild cards to like, oh, I know exactly what I'm doing with my style.
Nice.
Like, from this moment on, this is it. And it was understanding that there's a billion sounds in the world, but the one sound that is mine is my voice. And through the tools I have, I can turn that voice into so many different things. And so that's why the style has evolved the way that it has. And I guess it's important for me to share it because it was such a liberating moment.
Right.
And anyone who's trying to figure out their style, I think that's what it comes down to, is it's like, what is the thing that you cannot separate from? And the thing that no one else can do for you, like, that's your style.
Right.
And then if you bring in other people, it's because they're like adding and dancing with your style, but you have to know what your thing is first. Because like, what are you bringing to the table?
Mm-hmm.
And so like, yeah, I play piano and guitar and I do all this stuff, but the thing that's mine is like my voice. You could delete all those things and never play a piano again, fine, but my voice is the thing. That said, I am learning to make some songs that don't have a voice.
Yeah.
That's not true, actually. The percussion is not
true. Kind of true, not totally, but...
Okay, but that's what I wanted to add there, is why totally. It's so important.
Yeah.
Then to answer your question about the photography stuff, my mind coming into music was very focused on the brand and the marketing. What does the cover art look like? What does the website look like? And I know a lot of musicians don't think like that. But my background was in building portrait photography businesses and doing wedding photography and brand commercial films for businesses, and just like, that's the world I came from.
Right.
So at first I actually battled it. Uh-huh. I was like, look at me, I'm trying to be a musician and all I have is photography experience.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, it's a good thing.
Totally.
And I'm like, it's not a good thing. I like, am I a photographer or a musician? Everyone, it was like so thick to get through my head. And then one day I like the cover art on my albums, like I made it all myself. I photographed myself, I edited it all. Like, and to me that's no big deal. I'm like, yeah, sure. I'll just make a music video. Easy. And now I'm like, that's not normal.
Yeah, that's huge. One of the things I really admire about you is you're literally a comprehensive creative, in the sense of, that's what a label does, is fronts the photography in the video, in the production. And you're like, no, I'm actually doing all of this. And I think the way that you walk through, it's really great, because folks need to just kind of break it down. And one of the things that I love that you mentioned about those goals that you did have was just taking it down to size and taking it one at a time. Because it is like, if someone, you know, day one, you go, okay, you do need a photo, you need photography, video, production, you need to write, all these things, like, oh my gosh, where do I start? But just breaking it down to like these chunks. But I just think the fact that you have this like wealth and breadth of knowledge is amazing. You just accrued it and kept building. It's all coming together to build the same thing.
Yes, so. It's so exciting seeing it come together. Because when everything starts, it's like a mountain. There's all these paths. And when you get to the top, you're like, check it out. They all went the same place. At the bottom, you're like, which path? This path or that path? That's how I have experienced it. I think that's how everyone experiences it. Even if you don't have a background in visual arts, like, what if you're a doctor? What about doctorhood is going to help your music career?
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a lesson from my mom. So I will pass it on to the world. It's that whatever you have done in your life is your toolbox. It's like, oh, you're going to start snowboarding? Well, you used to ride horses. They're not different. Like, you had to learn how to balance. You had to learn how to feel something in your body. You had to learn how to fall. Like, same things, just now you're working with a different subject.
Mm-hmm.
And then you bring that over to, I'm going to perform on stage, and because of my mom, I'll think like, okay, how do I balance when I want to snowboard? Like, I feel my feet, I rock forward on my toes and my feet. That helps me feel calm before stage fright would set in. Like, you draw from everything. That's a side note, but it's really important.
Yeah.
Like you're never going to find yourself without tools. You have tools from whatever background you're in, and it's your job to figure out what they are. Okay, but more specifically, like, the branding and the visual, the photography, it's hard because I want to tell people, like, you don't have to do something that you're not good at.
Totally.
Ideally, we'd all be good at everything. And so maybe some people, they do need a label and they do need to hire somebody. It would stress them out and use up their precious energy trying to learn how to use a camera. And that's not what their calling is. I do the camera and all that because that's what I just have been born to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I simultaneously play the music and record myself. And it's like, to hand that over to someone else is actually more challenging for me.
How do you know when to delegate?
Mm-hmm.
Especially because you have a vision it's tough to hand your vision over to someone else because they have their own lens. So
I'm an artist who also is a businesswoman. That's also more rare. Mm-hmm. So before I did music, I was doing photography full time and I built up my own businesses. Building a business is a lot of research on reading business books, listening to business podcasts. Just like if you're learning a musical instrument, you're inundating yourself with all the YouTube tutorials and all the whatever. It's business in itself is a whole subject. Mm-hmm. So when it came to learning Ableton, it wasn't a musician that helped me learn Ableton. It was all the business people.
Oh, interesting.
Because the business people have broken it down into, this is how you schedule your day. This is how you get shit done. This is how you make money. So, and a lot of books on human psychology and human behavior, books about habits and mindset and positive thinking, that's the stuff that really makes a difference. It's when I say I woke up in the morning and worked on Ableton, I think that's where people get stuck. They're like, but how did you do that? I was tired. I had kids. I blah, blah, blah. The business books and the self-help books teach you how to actually implement. So for me, I woke up day after day and didn't work on Ableton. And like I said, my husband was like, are you ever going to work on Ableton? So I realized, oh, there's clearly some kind of blockage here. Like, it's intimidating, so I'm avoiding it, or I've got a lot to do, so I'm tired. All anything is time. Like, how much time have you put into playing guitar equals how good you are. Mm-hmm. I have put zero time into Ableton. I am zero good at it. The desire to become good at it, all that means is you need to find the time. And so I linked it up with something I wanted to make time for. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the idea of going to a coffee shop every morning and getting a coffee and spending some time just sitting there learning Ableton. Sitting at home, I was never going to do it.
Right.
But, like, I was motivated by the coffee.
Uh-huh.
At first, it was just a fun adventure, and then it became an addiction. but that was, I really credited that specifically, because I was like, the only way this is going to happen is if I make it a daily ritual that I wake up, I go straight to a coffee shop, and I spend an hour or two learning Ableton.
Okay.
And as long as I have that coffee, I can handle the stress of, like, this is obviously a frustrating situation because I'm here for this purpose. Mm-hmm. In the same way, it was like I carried the guitar around. I was never going to make 4 hours of sitting at home practicing happen.
Right.
But I brought it with me. And that's something that I would have learned from a business book where they're like, oh, you don't have time to answer emails? Answer emails while you're in the waiting room at the doctor's office. They give you, like, business people are so hungry for little tips and tricks so you can get more done and figure stuff out. And I've just applied that to the whatever I do. And I think that a lot of musicians would benefit from stop watching other musicians on YouTube or whatever you're doing and go read business books.
Yeah.
Not for the big picture of how does business work, but for the little picture of business gets done because of the little, like, tips that they give you on how to write a to-do list or whatever works for you. We function through habits. I think the book actually is called Habits. That if you wake up and nothing is a habit, then everything you do in the day, you have to use energy to make decisions. But you don't have to use all that much energy to go brush your teeth, because you've probably built it as a habit. In the same way, when you go to learn Ableton, the only reason it's hard is because it's not a habit yet. Anything you're doing, it's not a habit to practice guitar. That's why it's hard, because you have to take all this energy, all this motivation to, like, do something new. When you decide to be a musician, decide to do anything, you're asking yourself, what new habits are you about to have? Then you have to become an expert in building habits. That's all it is. That's why I went to the coffee shop every morning. I was like, I need a very clear habit. Wake up, go buy coffee, work on Ableton. That became a habit. At first it wasn't. I'd wake up and I'd be in bed and I'm like, I don't want to. I'll go running or something great that I like. I was like, no, this is a new habit. But it had to be really, like, strict. And just because I'm a human, I built that habit to the point where if I would wake up in the morning and didn't go do Ableton all day long, I would just be like, I don't know what to do with myself. That was so weird. The day didn't start right. I can't really focus. And it's so in there that it's really hard not to. Like, waking up and they're like, it's Christmas Day. We're going to go out to breakfast. And I'm like, can I go do Ableton first? Like, please. It's like so hard not to, because it's my habit.
Yeah.
And breaking habits is hard.
Yes.
So I actually gave up coffee.
Oh, wow.
I know. I gave up coffee because it became an addiction. That's been really hard because I built that habit so strong. I'd still wake up and go to the coffee shop, but I would order a tea instead. And like trying to fix that. But it's just a testament to the power of habit. You want to learn Ableton? You want to learn Photoshop? Whatever. Just find some way to make it a habit.
Mm-hmm. That might actually be some of the best advice that's been on here, because literally our DNA is wired to snap to
quantize
habits. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
quantize
exactly.
Habits. Yeah.
Totally. Talking about launching businesses and things of the like, you launched your own podcast,
mm-hmm.
The Wild Musicians Podcast. Do you want to just tell folks what it is? And then I would love to hear why and how it came to be.
It's a video and audio podcast, and I'm talking to working musicians. So that means people that wake up in the morning and they're like, I'm a musician. This is what I do. Even if they have other jobs, their heart is focused on music.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk a little bit about them and the music they're making. But more and more, I'm steering it towards more of the experience that musicians are going through.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like this, like, how can we offer each other tools? And because of my own interests, I'm always fascinated in the spiritual, the metaphysical, the emotional effects. Like, what is music? Anyone mm-hmm. want to talk about that? Like, get really philosophical on this, like, creepy, magical, mysterious stuff. And depending on the person I talk to, it's totally different. Just like what you're going to have on this podcast, right?
Right.
So it's free-form conversation like this. And the video part is fun because I bring in my filmmaking skills and I get to do a little bit of a documentary. If we have a simple meeting, like when we met at a coffee shop, so I just have a little bit of you playing guitar in the alleyway. But if I go to someone's house, then I get to capture more of their life and their personality and see them making a cup of tea or something. And you're like, whoa, right. Real person.
Yeah.
And because the reason I started the podcast was that I was here making music by myself. And as I started, I had those doubts of like, is everybody making music and feeling stressed about this? Or am I handling this the wrong way? And I feel really lonely. Is that normal? This is all new to me. So I don't know.
Right.
And I went on to find podcasts on the internet and I just couldn't find any that were giving me what I wanted. I would find people that are like, hi, we're the nerdiest people ever talking about the technological sides of music. And I'm like, yeah, but are you sad? And I was like, my dream would just be that I could every day like turn on a podcast and be like, oh, real people just talking about their feelings and like mm-hmm. saying what they do in their room, so that as I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, me too.
Right. In doing the podcast, what's the answer to your question?
Every musician that I talk to has struggles. And there are struggles that are specific to the fact we make music and that we understand each other when we talk about it.
Yeah.
Which is why I wanted music friends. And it's like all of us feel it, but the ones that are outperforming, the ones that are in a band that is really supportive, the ones that are on podcasts, it's like we have dirty laundry and we're dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't spoken to the musicians that are still in their room wallowing because they're not out connecting with us.
Right.
But I'm talking to them. I'm
yes.
like, hey, get out of your house. What will help is coming and being friends with us.
It's kind of full circle, which is really funny because you were that person in your room. What do you think it is that people need to hear?
When I interview all the musicians, we all have these struggles and everyone's a little bit different, but mm-hmm. the underlying thing is I'm afraid I'm not good enough. I'm afraid of failing. I'm afraid of succeeding. It's all the base fears that you have if you're anything. It doesn't matter if you're a musician or not.
Mm-hmm.
Then specifically, by making music, you become extra sensitive. So now that fear that your neighbor, the doctor, has of not being good enough is heightened because your job is to be more emotionally sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then to tell everyone how you're feeling. It's always action.
Yeah.
And it's always community that lead to healing. And that, I think, is just universal wisdom, not just for musicians, but that's who we're talking to. So
right.
it's like you need to muster any ounce of courage and energy that you have and get yourself to another person and then take the action of sharing the music with them. It doesn't matter what their response is because that's out of your control. What is in your control is that you took action and you started to create a connection with another human. And if that human sucked, go find another one.
Yeah.
And then you find another one. And eventually, if you keep going, you're going to find somebody that it's like vibing with you and they give you what you need. And the hard part is though, like, where do you get the courage and the energy to go do that? I think that's that's the solution. How do you actually implement it? And that's where I would bring you back to the business books. But if you don't know which direction to head in, it's definitely not like go deeper in the cave alone.
Right.
It's find the nearest human being and tell them that you like music.
Beautiful. And kind of talked about what others can gain by listening to the podcast. Would you mind sharing maybe insights of what you gained?
Now I can pick up my phone and I've got dozens of musicians that I can call and be like, hey, I'm getting attacked by self-doubt. And she's going to be like, yo, me too. It's fine.
Right.
And it's not some random girl on Instagram that's like, believe in yourself. It's like my actual friend.
Yes.
And different than my best friend, who's not a musician. She would like encourage me all the time. But it's different when someone's actually in it with you.
Yeah.
And saying like, not only am I encouraging you, but I'm encouraging you from like knowing what you're going through.
Yep.
And that's probably the biggest thing that I've gained is, I mean, the network of people that I know, the opportunities that I get from those people now, and that I give to them.
There really is just something special about sharing these moments, because I think so many of us at some point were that person in the room terrified to show anybody. Yeah. Oh yeah. my first band, I was pitching them my lyric ideas because I didn't want to say any of it. And then nothing was turning out the way I wanted. And my breakthrough moment was basically complaining to my mom, and she doesn't take shit, and was like, if you want this to happen, you got to do it yourself. Because if you're so adamant that it's that melody or that lyric and you don't want it to be changed, you've got to go up and you've got to sing that stuff, because no one's going to, as you were talking about, the thing you can offer is your voice. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified of that. And frankly, I was a really bad singer too. So it took years to like get to a decent place.
What your mom said is super powerful. And I have a tip for people. I'm all about documenting. So every time somebody would give me feedback on my singing, I would write it down. And these are like compliments. Like I would teach a yoga class and, my roommate said one morning, it was so nice to wake up to your singing.
Aww.
And a little boy on the street said, I like your song. Now, I don't really write them down anymore, but that first year when I was first writing songs and first performing, first getting out of my bedroom,
right,
I was taking those actions and stepping into the community and hungry for the response and then like clinging to it. Because there were days where I would be like, what am I doing? Am I actually a musician? And then I would open up this journal and I'd be like, look at all these people. I had all these post-it notes hanging on my wall above my piano so that when I sat down to make music, I was like, these people believe in me. And some of them believe in me so much that they have like invested in me in some way. Like, how dare you sit there and don't believe in yourself?
Right.
Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, yeah. All these people are like, I want to see you perform. And now I don't need to look at them anymore.
That's the super powerful thing too, to go, you know what, I've grown past this, you know?
Yeah. I remember thinking like, one day I won't need the post-it notes. Of all the people that have heard me sing, most of them didn't give me a compliment. But the ones that did, like, use that voice to, like, amplify. Like, let them be your encourager when the voices in your head start to be nasty.
Yeah.
That was a side note, but we were talking about the podcast.
I mean, most importantly, actually, where can people find it?
It's all hosted through Shaw Wild brand. It's not separate. So if you go to the Shaw Wild website, shawwild.com, there's a podcast link. I recommend watching it on YouTube because you get to see us talking and videos are fun. And you can see that little documentary I make at the beginning, the Wild Musicians playlist on the Shaw Wild YouTube channel.
Cool.
You can also listen to it anywhere you listen to podcasts, you know, podcast apps.
Right on.
Yeah.
Before we get going, I have a get stumped section for you.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you either or, and first thought that comes to your head, go for it. So Felix Snow or John Craigie?
Oh, Felix Snow.
John Mayer or Florence and the Machine?
Florence and the Machine.
Kygo or Avicii?
Avicii.
Whitney Houston or Christina Aguilera?
Christina Aguilera.
And then writing or podcasting?
Writing.
You cruise. I think that was probably an all-time great as far as cranking through. I was going to stump you once.
When you said writing or podcasting, the conscious question, stream of conscious question.
Yes.
Was if you had to give up one, which would you keep? Oh. So then I was like, obviously writing.
Right. Yeah, my answer would be 100% the same.
Right?
Yes.
But if you're like, which is like what you said, like a little bit more of a fun experience, sometimes you're like, well, podcasting.
Yeah, totally. Watching the poll and seeing like, because it is.
Don't make me choose.
Because they're questions that often someone would probably debate for, you know, you see people debate this person or this person ad nauseum. And I just find it fascinating to see, like, where does this go? And there's some interesting parts when people are torn and you hear that, because it's boiled down to be simple, but it's not. And I think that is true of so many things in music in general is, yeah, it on paper, it's super simple, but it's not. And I like personifying that and watching people just on the spot go, wait, what? And just the spontaneity of it. You're in a podcast. The whole thing's been kind of this conversation that makes sense for the most part. There's like a timeline to it. And then just throwing that out the window and going, cool, we've told this story. Now let's be random.
What you described about that internal, I don't even know how to say what you just said again. But it made me think of when you see music written down on a sheet and everyone would play it differently.
Yes, 100%.
And it's that feeling of like black and white on paper.
Yep.
But then you bring whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, your own lens. Totally. Because yeah, objective, or especially because music is so subjective, that it's, mm-hmm. I think, nice to.
On that note, a fun little story. My brother and I went and got coffee, and he's like the person I always want to please with my music. And be like, look, I do it too now! And we talked about Lizzo.
Oh, yeah.
And I realized that my brother and his group of friends come from a mindset that's very, I guess, kind of music snobby.
Mm-hmm.
Where she has like a broken piano at the beginning of one of her new songs.
Yep.
And my music friends that are in the industry and performing are all like, hell yeah, she's like experimenting and doing something weird. And my brother and his friends were all like, it's out of tune piano. Why would you have that at the beginning of a song?
Yeah.
And within just days, I heard them bash on it and someone else big it up. And it was a really powerful reminder of the subjectivity of it. And are you surrounding yourself with people that have the mindset of what you're doing is cool? Everything you're doing is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the people that are like, this is cool. Are you comparing to that?
Slight. Yeah, totally. It's funny because it seems so slightly different, but it's actually huge.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't really want to feel like I'm being held up to your standard of cool. I want you to realize that anything I do could be considered cool.
Right.
If you look at it the right way. So look at it that way.
Yeah. I have debates with my buddy all the time. He like produces and he's like an audiophile and it is everything in it. And I like sometimes when things are imperfect. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's like the aesthetic because it breaks. You were talking about too, like sometimes with electronic, when something's like overproduced in a sense, and I'm not saying all electronic music, because I'm just saying like, that's a prime example of production. To me, those like human elements, like you're talking about bringing in the voice, is like what makes it. And like, it's to me, it's about that soul. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes an imperfect piano or something that you would hear in the real world. Everyone sat down at an out of tune piano at some point and banged around, and there's still something really beautiful about it.
Yeah.
And especially because the resources to make perfect music is everywhere, like breaking the rule and making something that doesn't follow or fall into like the perfect 0-1 like binary of like the computer is a lot of fun.
Right? I was listening to some podcasts on that recently of just exactly that. Like the music could just go more and more perfect, 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 perfect. And what if we just don't?
Right.
I feel that. Like, I feel this pressure of when I'm producing. It's like, is this mixed and mastered to the liking of the people who have the finest tuned ears ever?
Right.
Or they could be like, that Shaw Wow girl, messy as fuck. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get really stuck in that and be like, yeah, is it going to be good enough? But then as soon as I I think more back to my brand and what I stand for. It's like, yeah, but did the women out there on their road trip have a really fun time listening? Good. That's what I cared about. Not that some like PhD audio engineer was pleased, but doesn't even get the lyrics.
Yes. Well, and that's what's so important too, is it's experiential, and what's going to come through is your heart, and then the people looking for that feeling, like you mentioned with the podcast, who has this feeling with your music? It's who has this feeling, and when it's raw and how you intended it and how you created it, that's going to land the person that's looking for that thing.
Yeah. And by no means is it a cop-out for quality.
Agreed.
If my song is not mixed and mastered perfectly, it's the best I could do, and tomorrow I'll do better.
Right.
It's not like, who cares? It's, I cared and I just didn't know how to do any better.
Yes. And that trajectory, people then get to see you grow also. And if a song is a good song, it'll still come through. I truly believe that, the feeling over fidelity. Of course, there's things where it's like, okay, if you wrote a great song and recorded it in your basement, which I've done, and it sounded terrible, doesn't make it a bad song, could have done better. And there's always, you can always go try again if you truly feel called to.
Because the song is a song.
Yes.
It's not the recording.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Yes.
So to really turn inward, what sets your music apart? For someone going to Shaw Wild for the first time on Spotify, what do you think makes it different and unique?
My first thought is different to what? I don't know what they've heard.
True. That is fair.
People that listen to a lot of electronic music, they are really excited about the fact that there's more acoustic instruments, or specifically that they're getting lyrics that you would typically find in folk, singer-songwriter, or soul. I don't know if that would be, I feel like I touch on that with what's on Spotify. I'm really referring to my next album. I think my best way to answer it would actually be sharing more of what my vision is for my bigger show.
Would love to hear that.
Go to a lot of festivals and shows. And my experience was that I would be listening to a singer-songwriter or a band, and I felt stuck in one genre, in one part of my body. You're making me feel things with my heart, but you're not making me feel sexual, like grinding and dancing. I'm not feeling energetic, like jumping. Mm-hmm. I'm not feeling spiritual, or I just feel like heartstrings are getting touched.
Right.
Then I'd go to a different stage, and I'm like, oh, this is grind central.
Yeah.
it's all sex in here. I'm very in my body and stomping and jumping. But after 2 hours of that, you're like, I wouldn't mind a little conversation.
Right. Yeah.
And then likewise, you go to a yoga class and you're like, woo, this is I'm up in heaven. This is great. But it gets a little woo-woo and disconnected. I just got to thinking, what if I made a show where we went through all of those things? My first idea was the chakras. Mm-hmm. And so it was to have a really healthy life and body. If you wake up and you feel really good, it's probably because energetically all the parts of your body are really balanced. Mm-hmm. It's also Maslow's pyramid of needs, the hierarchy. It's anytime a human's doing well, it's because they're physically taken care of, they're full of energy, they're creating freely, they're connecting with people, they're expressing themselves, they're connecting with something higher and greater. That's all there. So I wanted to make music and make a show that's all there.
That's actually the perfect segue to my last question for you, which is, what do you hope people get out of your music?
Part of me wants to say I would just totally want to leave it up to surprise. And I just keep thinking about how many people are out there, and you're just like, I can't control that shit.
Totally.
And part of the beauty of music is that, or painting or anything, is you make something and then everybody gets something out of it different.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the gift that you get back, is finding out what that is. But what I am crafting, because we do have to have some direction, is that sense of wholeness. I have a vision of people going to my big show one day when it's built up, and they walk out of that and they're like, I don't really know what happened, but I just feel good, complete. Not like I've danced and I've cried and I've sang beautiful poetry and I hugged people and I made out with someone because it was so sexy. But then at the next minute, I felt like I was connecting with the earth and the galaxies and the whole spectrum.
Right.
And so for me, I want to figure out how to do that, and creating if it's a bell curve or whatever the energy flow is, where it's I'm going to sing to you and we're going to reflect on stuff, and then we're going to connect with each other. and then we're going to dance and like forget about words and life and completely just dance and then somehow like bring it back. And
like a set of self-actualization.
Yeah, I guess I'm creating a giant yoga class that's musical. You know, it's like all parts of your body will feel stretched and free and you'll feel connected to everyone and you'll leave feeling like whole. I've been to a lot of concerts where I look around and everyone around me is stressed and insecure and they're looking at their phone. They're afraid to make an eye contact. I go up to like dance with a stranger and they're shy. And I have a beautiful dream is that I go to a concert and every person there is just fully open and ready to make friends and have a good time with everybody. And I do my best to bring that energy when I'm in the crowd, but I think I have a better chance from the stage.
Yeah, that is beautiful and exciting. And thank you so much for sharing.
Totally.
How can people be a part of this? Where can they find you?
Oh, please.
All that.
Okay, shawwild.com is a home base because I do multiple things, like the podcast and the paintings and the music, and they're all there. And at shawwild.com/yes please, go there and you sign up for my newsletter. I'm everywhere. I'm on Instagram and stuff. But if you really want to like get involved, get on my newsletter because I send out an email. I do my best to send it out every Friday.
Awesome. And that's Chawilde.
Mm-hmm. And if you listen to my podcast, then you'll know because my little way to remember it is Shawwild. C-H-A, Wild has an E. Perfect. Except it's like in chipmunk voice.
C-H-A, Wild has an E. Awesome. This was so fun. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Totally.
Really excited to hear this next project. I'll make sure that the Spotify playlist for the episode has the new EP. Thank you again so much for doing this.
You're so
excited to have this out.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Hello. I'm a chill motherfucker with my nails done right and my hair in a clap, not fun.
My nails done right.
Do what I want and I say what I think and I lay out in the sun. The end of the night when I'm lonely, dreams come after me. I got a dream and it's killing me. Gotta let it go, but it's still in me. Could somebody please put a pill in me? When there's a pill in me, there's more chill in me.
Nothing. 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 Nothing.
Chill, motherfucker, and I have a good time. Travel light, so less is mine. No house, no kids, no puppy dogs. No snow, no rain, no winter falls. No thank you. No thank you. Oh no, there's no credit cards. No picking weeds out of my yard. No thank you. No thank you. No, no, no thank you.
Nothing. Nothing.
Sing for the birds away. As the sun gets high, I start to bake. If I trip on the land, I'll fall in the sea. Go with the flow so the waves catch my feet. I and I think close. Duck, 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 go. Pass it around so we can stay loose. Puff, 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 puff. Pass it around. Those love with the walkies and they love for now. Empire wing, empire wing. I'm a chill motherfucker and my life is good. Don't give a damn about what. Left the ground where I once stood. I'm surprised, never thought I would.
That was Chill Motherfucker off of Chill Lightning Rainbow, Shawwild's latest EP. She also just dropped a dual single, Starfire. If you dig what you hear, please subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is. Truly appreciate the support, and we'll see you next time.